him. The leg snapped.
What are we going to do?
We've got to go out and get him.
Go out? You can't.
I will suit up, Voznesensky said.
You're in no condition to go outside, Reed insisted. You haven't had more than 2 hours' sleep since we left the dome.
I must. But his first try at getting up from the cockpit seat was a failure. His legs were too weak to support him. The Russian tried again. The best he could do was to stand shakily for a moment and then collapse back onto the seat.
Don't look at me, Reed said, near panic. I can't go out. I'm not trained for EVA work.
Stop arguing.
Ishenko's voice came over the radio speaker, weak, gasping.
I can make it to the hatch, I think.
The cosmonaut began crawling along the ground, pulling himself with his hands, dragging his useless left leg.
If his suit ruptures, Voznesensky let the thought hang.
Turning sweaty-faced to Reed, he commanded,
Get into your hard suit, Doctor. Now.
But I...
You need not go EVA, Voznesensky said, his voice heavy with distaste. But our comrade will need someone to help him into the airlock. You can do that much, can't you?
Reed's insides were fluttering, his hands trembling.
Yes, of course,
he said, desperately trying to calm himself.
Naturally, I can help him out of his suit and tend to his leg.
An angel of mercy, Voznesensky snarled. From the cockpit of the stranded rover, Janie and the three others had watched and listened to Ivchenko's ordeal. With growing horror, they saw their would-be rescuer sink into the sand, heard his shouts for help, watched the second rover carefully back up and pull the cosmonaut free, flinched at his scream when his leg went. Now Jamie watched grimly as Ivchenko crawled painfully toward the rover's airlock hatch, and he knew there was nothing left, no hope of their being rescued, unless he did it himself. Sol 40. Afternoon. It took almost 2 hours for Jamie to struggle into his hard suit. Exhausted and weak from his illness, he knew that he had to make the trek to the second rover carrying a lifeline that would at last bring his three companions across the ghost crater of treacherous sand to the safety of the rescuing vehicle. Voznesensky had objected strenuously.
You are too sick to do it,
the Russian had insisted.
I am the only one remaining who has even half his normal strength.
Jamie shut him down with an upraised hand.
Mikhail, he said softly to the cosmonaut's image on the comm screen, if you get stuck out there too, then we're all dead. If I get stuck, we still have Pete or even one of the women to try to get to you.
They are all in worse condition than you are.
You've got to stay with your vehicle, Jamie said flatly, unemotionally, as if he were reading instructions from a printed form. That is self-evident. The regulations are perfectly clear, and they're entirely right, too.
Voznesensky scowled, but he no longer argued.
I'm strong enough to make it around the perimeter of the crater, Jamie said. I'll carry a line that we can use to bring the others across the lake.
Lake?
A crater full of sand.
He's more like a bog than a lake,
Voznesensky grumbled.
Whatever. That's how we'll do it, said Jamie.
Voznesensky muttered something in Russian.
How's Ivchenko?
Jamie asked. The cosmonaut's face went even darker.
Reed is taking care of his leg. Apparently it is not broken, but the knee is badly dislocated. He cannot walk. He can't even stand up without support.
So? It's up to me.
Now, after 2 hours of sweaty struggle, Jamie dogged down his helmet on the neck ring of his suit, trying to keep his doubts at bay. A couple of kilometers, he told himself. 2-3 clicks at most. I can do that. Yet his arms felt almost too heavy to lift. His legs were rubbery. Connors had wanted to help him into the hard suit, but he was too weak to stand for more than a few minutes at a time. Ioana and Ilona assisted him, tight-lipped and silent, while Connors read off the checklist.
Not bad, the astronaut quipped, having two gorgeous women help you dress.
He was sitting on the edge of his own bunk, the checklist trembling in his hand, trying to keep a smile on his sweaty, weary face. Through the open hatch of the airlock, Jamie could see that Connors was having trouble breathing. His chest heaved painfully, his mouth hung open. The two women were not much better off. They moved slowly, listlessly. Their faces were drawn and pale. How many mistakes are they making? Jamie wondered. Are they killing me because they're too weak to know what they're doing? The climbing harness, its tripod stand and winch mechanism, and its massive drum of cable was set against the airlock's side bulkhead. As he slid the harness over his shoulders and fastened it across his chest, Jamie thought ruefully, "We won't be using this to climb the cliffs and see my village. I'll never get to see whether it's a real village or not." Finally, he was fully suited, his backpack cinched tight and checked out, his harness ready to be connected with the cable. All systems working, unless they had overlooked something. "Okay," Jamie said, already feeling the enormous weight of the suit, the backpack, the responsibility on his wobbly legs. "Clear the airlock." Ioana reached up and touched his cheek.
"Shut your visor first," she said tenderly. "And may God go with you."
God, Jamie thought. He remembered that his fetish was still in his coverall pocket. Buttoned up inside the hard suit, he could not reach the pocket to touch it. "It's there," he told himself. "I'm not going without it. It's there where it should be." Ilona cast him a wan smile as she and Ioana backed out of the airlock compartment. Jamie pulled the hatch shut after a desultory wave to Connors. Once the hatch was sealed, he reached out a finger to push the control button that started pumping the air out of the chamber, and saw that he had not put on his gloves. His stomach lurched. "Four of us checking out everything, and the damn gloves are still tucked in my belt pouch. What the hell else have we screwed up?" He pulled the gloves on and sealed them to the suit cuffs. Then he started the pumps. In what seemed like mere seconds, the light on the little square control panel went red. Jamie unconsciously drew in a deep breath. His chest felt strange, rasping, the way it did sometimes in the chill mountain air of winter. The outer hatch popped open a few inches, then stopped. A trickle of reddish sand seeped into the airlock chamber. "It's going to be a battle every step of the way," Jamie realized. "Just be careful. Be damned careful." He pushed the hatch all the way open, leaning against it with his weight to force it back against the sand. The powdery, rust-colored stuff poured in around his boots, billowing up into feather-like clouds of dust as he moved. Despite the low gravity, the climbing rig's stand and reel of cable felt as if they weighed tons. The cable reel, especially. It was meant to be rolled along the ground, not lifted. "There's no way to carry it in one hand," he told himself. "I'm going to have to make a couple of trips." Grasping the folded tripod stand, Jamie reached with his free hand for the ladder rungs, studding the rover's flank just outside the hatch. Methodically, he made his way up to the roof of the forward module and set the tripod down there.
"Jamie, are you all right?"
Joanna's voice asked.
I'm up on top of the cab. I've got to figure out how to get that damned reel up here. It weighs a ton."
He heard a mutter of voices, indistinct. Then Connors came on, weak, almost breathless.
"Connect the cable, winch motor. Latch it so it won't turn. Then you can power it up to you,"
the astronaut said. Jamie grimaced inside his helmet.
"I guess I would have thought of that eventually. Thanks, Pete. Nothing to it."
Everything seemed to go so slowly. Jamie spent half a lifetime winching the reel up to the rover's roof, then clomping down to the tail end of the vehicle and carefully climbing down onto the firm ground back there. Fumbling, sweating, cursing to himself, he set up the tripod stand and bolted it to the equipment attachment points built into the side of each of the rover's modules. Then he once again hooked the cable to the winch motor built into the stand.